Welcome to the Together PDX podcast. You're listening to our Gospel Gathering series, where we will be replaying valuable content from past events where local Portland leaders gathered to hear from authors, theologians, and scholars. We'd like to note that the views shared by our guests don't necessarily reflect those of the entire Together PDX team. We pray today's content enriches your day and spirit. Hey there, welcome back to the Together PDX podcast. I'm Elise Gallus, bringing you another talk for our May 2025 Gospel Gathering, Future Church, this time with none other than Dr. Ed Stetzer. Ed actually gave this talk as a part of a national tour he's doing, traveling around in a Sprinter van, so we were really excited to have him join us for this day. If you're not yet familiar with his work, Ed is the Dean and Professor of Leadership and Christian Ministry at Talbot School of Theology at Biola University. He also serves as Distinguished Visiting Scholar at Wycliffe Hall at Oxford University, where he teaches twice a year. Stetzer has planted, revitalized, and pastored churches, trained pastors and church planters on six continents, earned two master's degrees and two doctorates, and written hundreds of articles and a dozen books. He's regional director for Lausanne, North America, editor-in-chief of Outreach Magazine, and regularly writes for news outlets such as USA Today and CNN. Ed's talk for us today is titled The Moment and the Mission, The Church, the Culture, and New Portland Data. Before you hear from him, I do want to give you a heads up that he's going to reference slides quite a few times throughout this talk. We're going to put those in the show notes, but if you would prefer a video version of this talk that also shows the slides, you can find that at togetherpdx.org/podcast. This is part two of Future Church with Dr. Ed Stetzer.
I'm going to talk about the moment and the mission, and I'm going to talk about the church, the culture, and share a bit of new Portland data as well. But let me begin with a Bible passage. It's actually 1 Corinthians chapter 16, verse 9. In 1 Corinthians chapter 16, verse 9, I'm using the CSB, which is one of our partners on the Lead the Way tour, and my preferred Bible translation. But it says this, a wide door for effective ministry has opened for me. Now, I love that phrase because I think when you're about to hear today, we've already heard two talks that kind of talk about there's some openness. There's a perhaps a wide door of effective ministry. Now, if you follow the news and you follow sort of research in and around religion, you'll actually know that some of the new religion research made the New York Times on Easter Sunday and USA Today on Easter Sunday. So two national publications. I had the privilege of writing the one in USA Today. This is actually the article. I didn't pick the title. I mean, I'm fine with the title, but the New York Times also noticed there's something going on in the culture related to issues of faith. The subtitle there is actually my words at the end of the article. It's not time to call this a revival, but something is stirring in the culture. Christians would do well to pay attention, live out their faith, and step into the opportunity to share with others. So when we started this State of the Church initiative, obviously we're drawing from research that's in 2024 and now leaning into 2025. And when we started, this idea sort of began to bubble up with Glue and Barna. I would tell you that there was a lot of uncertainty about in 2024 what the data was looking like. It's sort of strange. But what I want to tell you is the recent, even few months of data that we have, I'm so glad that I'm literally driving around in a Sprinter van. I'm kind of a motivational speaker living in a van down by the river. Yeah. You have to be old to get the joke, man. So, or watch vintage television as well. Because there's some really exciting data I want to share with you, so much so that I had the privilege to share it in USA Today. It's been people talking about these things in New York Times and more. So a wide door for effective ministry has opened for me, but the rest of that verse says, yet many oppose me. I don't think we're in the midst in the clear that we're going to see some sort of spiritual outbreak. There's a lot going on in the culture and a lot going on in the church. And hopefully in the next few minutes, we're going to unpack some of that in a way that's helpful and hopeful that'll provoke you. The writer of Hebrews says to provoke one another to love and good deeds. That's my hope today. I think naming things helps us to navigate things. I'm a missiologist. My PhD is in the area of mission and missions. And so I want to help us to navigate the current moment we're in. And I've called this the cultural convulsion. I kind of have no unpublished thoughts. So if I'm talking about something, you can find this in Outreach Magazine. So I wrote a whole article on the cultural convulsion, but we're in the midst of a cultural convulsion unlike anything we've seen in decades, in most of our lifetime. The last time we see the culture as tumultuous and turbulent was back in the late 60s and the early 70s. So it's a cultural convulsion. So David Brooks wrote an article about this in The Atlantic a few years ago. And in the title of his article was America is Having a Moral Convulsion. And in there, by the way, David's a relatively new follower of Jesus. And so he writes this article, and I find it fascinating. So I actually invite him to dialogue with some of the pastors in one of my academic cohorts. And I wrote an article kind of based on our response, and I kind of made it a few nuances to that. First of all, it's not America. It's the whole world. 3 weeks ago, I was in Indonesia. Last summer, I was in Ukraine. Everywhere we go around the world is in the midst of an unprecedented time of cultural convulsion. And so it's all around the world. Just in just a few months, actually, David Kinnaman and I will be together at Oxford University, where I teach this joint Talbot School of Theology, Oxford University class. And David will be coming over and interacting with some British researchers. And what they're seeing in their data is really, you might even say, more surprising, even shocking, than compared to what we're seeing in the U.S. data as well. But this convulsion is all around us, right? We see and feel. It's not just a moral convulsion. I think it's a cultural convulsion. We look statistically, we're at some of the most divided times in our lifetime. And I think, and I don't want you to miss this, I think we are from one cataclysmic event away from widespread social unrest. And I want you to think about this for just a moment. I recognize when I mention a political figure, sometimes it's jarring for different people. But think about the situation that we would have been in if that Butler, Pennsylvania assassination attempt had been one inch to the side. I mean, there's literally a movie called Civil War that was created recently. I watched it. It was okay. They had California and Texas on the same side of a civil war. So, you know, it's completely unrealistic. And I'm a Californian. David used to be. He recently moved to Texas. But if there is a civil war and California and Texas are on different sides, you probably want to get the same side as Texas because they're going to win. But the point is that we're one cataclysmic event from widespread social unrest. We actually see some of it pretty regularly already. We are in the midst of a cultural convulsion. David Brooks in his article wrote that every 60 years, America goes through a cultural convulsion. And he cites one scholar primarily and another secondarily. And so let's look back. So in 1968, just out of interest, anybody in the room had graduated high school before 1968? Raise your hand if you graduated high school before 1968. There you are. Can I ask you a question? Can I ask you a question? I just did, right in front of everybody. Where did you live in 1968? Fresno, Cali. You lived in California in the midst of the greatest cultural convulsion of your lifetime. And I mean, it was everywhere. The country was divided. She's shaking her head. You weren't sure what the future was going to hold. And I want you to know that for a lot of people, 2000 and 2020 to where we are now, we're now in the 49th month of 2020. Because the cultural convulsion that we've been walking through feels a lot like perhaps 1968. Let me take you back to 1968. You might remember 1968. There were huge protests, civil rights protests. There were assassinations. Martin Luther King Jr. was assassinated May 4th. Bobby Kennedy was assassinated that year. There were war protests. I mean, think about how similar 2020 sounds to 1968. Now, history doesn't repeat itself, but it does tend to rhyme. And so there's similarity between the two. Matter of fact, in 1968, there was a global pandemic. It was actually, your parents probably call it the Hong Kong flu, but we call it H3N2 today. Now they didn't shut everything down like they did in 2020. Actually, they started planting Woodstock, which seems like a strange idea to slow the spread of any diseases. But 1968 was a cultural convulsion. Before that, it's the late 1800s, early 1900s. So every 60 years. So we're walking through. Let's try to name something. Naming it helps us to navigate it. We're walking through a cultural convulsion unlike anything we've seen in our lifetime. So helping us name it helps us to navigate it. But also, let's acknowledge that we're walking through a time of great cultural divide. Great cultural divide. I try to build relationships with secular religion reporters in secular publications. Because I want them to have somebody to call. Because I want you to know, like, all the people you don't want to answer the phone to represent you as evangelical Christians always love to answer the phones when reporters call. And so I try to say, listen, I'll help you find people who love Jesus, who represent kind of the mainstream of the evangelical movement, or trying to show and share the love of Jesus in the midst of the broken and hurting world. And so I was meeting with the religion reporter at the time for USA Today. She's a remarkably gifted religion writer. She's retired from there, now working elsewhere. But she sat down with me. We were in Northern Virginia, where USA Today's headquarter is. I write for them occasionally. And she said, Ed, I mean, tell me, how are Christians feeling in our cultural moment? This was probably 10, 12 years ago, over a decade ago. And I said, Kathy, I think Christians feel marginalized in the midst of our cultural moment. Now, Kathy, it actually happens to be Jewish. And as the words came out of my mouth, Christians feel marginalized, I thought this might not have been the best sentence to say to a Jewish person. And she responded with some wonderful Yiddish, including Oy Vey. And she said, Ed, you Christians have had every president ever elected in the United States has been a Christian. And I said, Kathy, I don't think we're using the word the same way. Because we don't think there's been this unbroken string of godly believers inhabiting Pennsylvania Avenue. She said, Ed, so like you're saying that at the time it was 70+% people, about 75% of Americans claim to be Christians when we had this conversation. She said, so, I mean, when they say they're Christians, you're saying they're not Christians? And I said, well, I mean, kind of, yeah. She says, you know, like, we don't do that as Jews. Like, anyone who says they're Jewish, we're like for them being Jewish. And I said, actually, Kathy, come to think of it, we not only like think that a whole lot of people who say they're Christians aren't Christians, a lot of our evangelism is actually convincing people who think they're Christians that they're actually not Christians, so they can become actual born-again Christians. And you know that's true. So she said, you should write on that. So I did. And I wrote an article in USA Today, and I'm going to use my hand to kind of explain what I wrote. I said, because I was trying to explain this to a secular audience, and I said, you got to remember that about 75% of Americans say that they're Christians. 75 versus 25. This was a decade ago. So 25% of Americans say they're not Christians, and 75% say they do, but you have to really see them differently. About 25% of Americans actually say they're Christians, and it's a real shaping reality to their lives. Now, that includes Catholics, Protestants, evangelicals, and Mormons. Now, again, I'm not making theological categories here. I want you to listen to what I describe. These people say that they're Christians, and they shape their lives around it in meaningful ways. It's not a theological category that everyone I describe is a Christian. Now, that's 25% of America. About 25% of America actually is what I called in the article congregationally Christian. I'm Christian because on Christmas and Easter, I go to a church. I want to get married and somehow be connected to the church. And if I get buried, I want to somehow be connected to the church. They're not really shaping their lives around it, but they have a loose connection. 25% of Americans are culturally Christian. They're actually, people, don't put that shut up, please. Not yet. There's a big reveal, so stay with me. So just pretend you didn't see that right there. Men in Black, flasher, boom. All right, so sorry for the movie reference for the Pentecostals. I know you don't go to see those movies. I saw it on VidAngel, and I apologize. So, 75% of Americans say that they're Christians, and I grew up nominally Catholic in New York City. The Catholic Church was the church we didn't go to on Sundays, but we still thought of ourselves as sort of part of this. We didn't like Protestants, I never knew why, but furthermore, we also kind of would defend the church. So, America's kind of like this. So this was a decade ago, 75% Christian, 25% non-Christian. But something's clearly happened in our culture, And what's mainly happened in our culture is this group here, what we might call nominal Christians, though I will tell you that the USA Today asked me not to use the word nominal because it was too hard of a word for their readership, and then just for a moment I hated America. But anyway, that's another story for another day. But I don't anymore. I'm just saying we should know the word nominal. It means name only from the Latin. So these people here are not committed Christians, right? They use the word Christian, but they're not committed. That number has declined in 10 years. We're going to look at that in just a minute. But what I want you to see is that the cultural divide used to be between people who use the word Christian to describe themselves and non-Christians, which is about half secular people, half other religions. What's happened is nominal Christians have actually changed so many of their beliefs. They've moved away from the people who are particularly religious, particularly on controversial social and cultural issues. And now there's not much statistical difference between nominal Christians and secular people on major issues of the day. Now, I want you not to miss this because it explains why now convictionally Christian people are on the other side of the cultural divide. So I used my hand, but I spoke at the Awana Global Summit, and they turned it into a graphic for me. Let's take a look at the big reveal. Here it is. There it is. I know. Like, that's like third grade, you know, MS Paint. But anyway, so here's the thing. So you look at the far side, mainstream culture was a Judeo-Christian consensus, and atheists and people of other religion were on the other side of the cultural divide. Fast forward today, now secular people, cultural Christians, and congregational Christians tend to have the same beliefs, and that's the mainstream consensus. And now, when you hold beliefs, for example, about the exclusivity of Christ, or the Bible's claims about sexuality, or whatever else it may be, you are on the other side of the cultural divide. So I want you to see that the cultural convulsion and the cultural divide frame our conversation today. And it's worth taking a look from there at the big picture of religion. You already saw David Kinnaman mention it. The big picture of religion in America is the slow decline. Now, I'm going to share some Barna stats and data, but I'll do it quickly. David's going to unpack some of this more. But one of the things you'll see is Christian identity is on the decline. Christian identity has been on the decline. I see some of you taking pictures of my slides. Did I give you permission to take pictures of my slides? You can take all the blurry pictures you want of my slides. I'm actually going to give you all the slides that I present today. I'll tell you in just a minute or two. So Christian identity is on the decline, and you can actually see from 2009, you're going to hear 2009 a lot, to 2024, the decline is like 20 percentage points. Actually, a lot of people talk about the rise of the nuns, and typically the number they use is about 1% less people identify as a Christian every year for the last three decades. The Pew Research people coined the phrase the rise of the nuns, N-O-N-E-S, not the nuns like the nice ladies with hats who can fly. Again, you got that from 1968, didn't you? Nick at Night, anybody? The flying nun? Anyway, so the rise of the nuns are people who say they have no religious faith or practice. This is actually a picture, the share of Americans with no religious affiliation. Every year, 1%, 1%, 1%, 1%. But I know what you're seeing. You're seeing the last year, and I want you to see the last year, but I also want you not to miss that the big trend of religion, even though in some ways we're going to talk about how it's changing, the big trend of religion, even if we go back to where we were and see a few percentage points, that just puts us where we were like 3 years ago. The biggest shift in religion is the percentage of people opting out from it altogether. That's the big story of religion for the last three decades. Let me say it again. Let's put the next slide. The biggest shift in religion is the percentage of people opting out altogether. Look at it generationally, right? Look at it generationally. This is from Barna. You can actually see elders, you know, older than boomers, that they're about 5%, like nothing. And then there's some atheists, that's the light gray. And then there's some agnostics, that's the lighter gray. By the way, if you track that atheist number, that's the mid-color gray that goes up the side next to the bigger number. One of the things that a lot of Christians say to me, there's been this big surge of atheism. I want you to know there's not been a big surge of atheism, right? You say, but what about all those books that became New York Times bestsellers? Yeah, you were buying them to refute them. What there's been a big growth in is the rise of the nuns, people who have no religious affiliation, and you can see atheists and agnostics track along with that. Let me show you a graphic of what the United States looked like from 2008 to 2022. In 2008, the nuns were most concentrated in the West Coast, right where we are, right? I live in the West Coast. The West Coast is the best coast, but it's also the most secular part of the country. More than 30, in 2008, 35%+ people were nuns on the West Coast. But that did not hold. It has spread across the country. Even the Bible Belt is now a slightly lighter shade of red. The only place that that has not happened is in North Dakota. Are you like from North Dakota, bro? All right. Are you Lutheran? No? Because it's the Lutherans in North Dakota are holding back. Any Lutherans here? There's one Lutheran. Okay, good. Well, there's ever four Lutherans. There's always a fifth. Sorry. Sorry. I'll explain that to the Baptists later. So I want you not to miss the growth of this. Now, I want you to say something with me, but something's going on in the culture. You ready? But something's going on in the culture. Let me give you an example. This is religious attendance by gender and birth year. Now, you all know this, that women are the backbone, the lifeblood of the church. Amen? Men, step up. Women are the lifeblood and the backbone of the church. I want to hear from the men. Amen. You better know it. And you can look back on the left side of that chart, 1940. Look how much women born in 1940, how much more they go to church than men born in 1940. And then you can go to 1950 and 1960. That's the second line on the chart. Or you can keep going. The gap closes some, but you go up to 1970 still. You can go up to 1980 still. But something is going on in the culture. Don't you miss this. For the first time in religion research, we've been tracking these things for decades, decades, and decades. We find that more Gen Z young men are going to church than Gen Z young women. And I hear some of you think, I think that is good. Like, cause the chart goes up. You can see it go up. That's good. That's worth a, whoo, that came from the students over here. I appreciate the enthusiasm. But a big part of that is more young women are dropping out of church. So both of those things are true at the same time. Now, I told you I was going to give you the charts. Okay. So we're going to use a QR code if you want to get the charts. Now, here's the QR code. I'm going to give you a few things. I love pastors and church leaders. At the Talbot School of Theology, we love pastors and church leaders. We're the third largest multi-denominational seminary in the world, the largest seminary in the Western United States. God's doing great things. I want to share things with you as the dean of the Talbot School of Theology. So you can get the State of the Church book, right? That's something that David and his team at Barna put together. I'm the general editor of Outreach Magazine. I want to give all of you a free one-year subscription to Outreach Magazine. I'm the general editor of a new curriculum at Right Now Media just for pastors. It's called Right Now Pastors Plus. I'm giving you free access for that. Sermon Central, free access for that. Sermon Shots is one of these incredible AI tools that takes your mid-sized church and you can now create video content and AI is doing it for you. Give you free, and then a free copy of the State of the Bible. But I recognize some of you QR codes are kind of a new thing. I'm the father of three 20-something daughters, and I basically have to use QR codes to schedule time with them. I'm just kidding. Everyone uses QR codes today. Okay, so what I want you not to miss is the data, the charts. Before you're done today, you'll get this courtesy of Glue. You actually send a text. You scan using your camera, open it, send a text. It'll put you on what's called the Glue feed. You can say stop at any time, but over the next 2 days, all those things will be delivered to you. Big picture, right? So I like to illustrate things with my hands. Let me talk about the gravitational pull of the secularized world. So here's the Earth, right? And the Earth has a bunch of satellites revolving around it. Elon Musk putting about three a day, I think. And these satellites go around, and sometimes you'll know a satellite begins to lose its orbital space. They call that orbital decay. Maybe it's because of the dust or the gravitational pull. So around the Earth comes a satellite. That satellite gets closer to the Earth, closer to the Earth. Orbital decay, we call that. Well, that's what's going on in religion in America. It's what's been going on in religion in the Western world. Canada's about 7 points ahead of us. UK about 12 or 13 points ahead of us in secularization. So that's what's been going on. The secularization, the gravitational pull of secularization, 1% less Christian, 1% less Christian, 1% less Christian, and then the meteor called 2020 happened. So David mentioned earlier, like we're looking at religion research, and it's just like a bucket of crazy. We're trying to figure out what's going on in our culture today. But think of it this way, right? So again, here's the Earth. Here's the satellite's orbit shrinking, 1% less, 1% less, 1% less. And then this mediator called 2020 comes in, hits the satellite, and it's going like five different directions at the same time. I made a graphic for the magazine at Outreach Magazine. Let me show you the graphic. So again, I'm no graphic artist, as you've seen by both of the graphics thus far. But in the decaying orbit of religion, the meteor of 2020, the cultural convulsion that we're in, right now walking through the cultural divide we're all experiencing, religion is moving in different directions all at the same time. Now, let me give you some quick examples. For example, I've already mentioned Gen Z men. You know why? Gen Z, I don't know if you know this, you probably do. There's a crisis of young men today. I got three daughters, so I know it's hard to be a young woman in the world today, and I'm always on their team and their side. But as I got to meet their friends, I could see, and you will know, there is a crisis of young men in our country. And some of them are turning to the good news of the gospel of Jesus Christ at higher numbers before. Part of the challenge is a whole lot of them are also turning to Andrew Tate, they know who he is. Who's an example of the worst of toxic masculinity. Some are returning to Joe Rogan, not the same category, but they're being discipled increasingly by Joe Rogan of hours-long podcasts. Some of them are turning to Jordan Peterson, and I would say being helped in many, many cases. I want you not to miss this. I don't want the young men in Portland turning to Jordan Peterson, to Joe Rogan, or to Andrew Tate. I want them turning to the good news of the gospel of Jesus Christ and being discipled by the men in your churches. And again, to be clear, I'm not putting those three in the same category. But the point is, the Gen Z men, and then Gen Z teens, David's going to talk more about this later, but their spiritual openness, or I'll give you another example, right? Bible sales. Like the Wall Street Journal puts on its front page that 23% increase in Bible sales, mostly from first-time Bible users. And even in my USA Today article, I spent more time writing in the USA Today about a new study that just came out in England, because England tends to be ahead of us statistically, that actually shows a drastic increase in young adults going to church, particularly young men. Now, I know what you're saying. If I'm you, I'm like, well, Portland's different, and Portland is different. I just came back from San Francisco. San Francisco's different. Portland's different. I will tell you that both San Francisco and Portland were hit by the 2020 meteor harder than most places in the world. And the cultural convulsion became very real. So I worked some with an organization called Come Near, and in partnership with Together PDX, the Mission Group, Seven Sense Research, all Come Near. We're actually doing some research in and around Portland. This is a kind of a brief preview of the 2025 Portland Community Study, just looking at Gen Z in particular. And I want you to know that one of the things we're seeing is renewal looks different today. And one of the things we're seeing is spiritual renewal for Gen Z, based on some of the data and research, is often not tied to churches, denominations, or institutions. It's happening, and there's a specific openness. Let me tell you about San Francisco, because I know you'll see some similarity between two. If you're my age in San Francisco, I got the American Bible Society to do a specific study of San Francisco, looking at some of the data. If you're my age or older in San Francisco, you're kind of what you expect. Kind of maybe a very secular, very sort of over religion, very progressive on different things. But if you're a young adult in San Francisco, Bible reading is actually up. You're interested in spiritual questions. And we see in Portland, based on some of the initial data, again, there's going to be a big release later, and I'm not doing the big release now, but it's happening personally, relationally, experientially, not generally inside traditional structures. Now, yet a deep spiritual hunger exists. We know this. You feel this. You experience this. People are looking around saying, this hasn't worked. The culture is failing. What are we going to find? That's the crisis of young men, but it's a crisis in our culture. And I want you to miss this, right? Even with lower institutional affiliation, over half of Gen Z in Portland desire spiritual growth. 6 in 10 are curious about life's spiritual dimensions. The soil is soft in many cases for meaningful spiritual conversations with Gen Z at a higher level than prior generations before. Matter of fact, when you look at Christian identity in Portland, Christian identity national is 62%. PDX is 51%. Gen Z is actually 41%. So you see the difference, right? So this is a more secular advice. That's not shock to you. It's not news to you. But spiritual curiosity, when you look at Portland and you look at people who are 29 years of age and older, their spiritual curiosity is at 41%. You look at Gen Z, their spiritual curiosity is at 59%. Sisters and brothers, there's something going on in the culture. Trust in relationship, indispensable, non-negotiable. 74% of Gen Z prioritize personal experience to shape their spirituality. Building trust, offering authentic relational experiences is critical to reaching them. Much, much more to come. I just wanted to come bring some data that might be new, might be helpful to you. So again, openness openness is here. Openness is real, but it needs invitation. When a smaller but meaningful 35% say they want to learn about Jesus, don't miss that. 35% say they want to learn about Jesus. They're open if the approach is relational. So let me just say, I think that our barriers here, the barriers are relational, not really theological. Now, mind you, again, I'm the dean of the Talbot School of Theology, convictionally evangelical Bible-centered school. But that's sometimes not the place where we start with engaging somebody who doesn't know Christ. We start from our foundation and then build a bridge to them. And the barriers here are relationship. Their challenge isn't the rejection of spirituality. It's a distrust of organized religion, a lack of trusted, reliable guides. Top barriers for Gen Z are hypocrisy and feeling intimidated. So we see the reality before us. Sisters and brothers, I want to say to you that our time is, three words that I like to describe, our time is disrupted, precarious, and opportune. Disrupted, precarious, and opportune. Let me just quickly go through, just put up some charts that we're not going to dwell on. Take a look, because David's going to dwell on them more in a bit. Take a look at rising spiritual openness, especially among young people, right? We see it. Let's take a look. Rising spiritual hunger. Look at the Gen Z on the left versus the boomers on the right. Something is going on. Say it with me. Something is going on. Or look at this, the personal commitment to follow Christ. We'll let David unpack that, but sisters and brothers, something's going on. Look at how younger generations are re-engaging with churches. Something's going on. And I didn't give you the last year of that one chart, Christian identity. Let's take a look at that with 2025 data included. Something is going on. Now, again, I know you want the graphs. Put the chart up, QR code one more time if you want to get those graphs, and I'll close with this. Sisters and brothers, it's an opportunity for us to step up, step in, stand in the gap, show and share the love of Jesus. The promises of culture have failed. The meteor of 2020 hit hard in Portland and across the whole Western. The most secular parts of the country in some ways were hit hardest by the cultural convulsion, still experiencing the cultural divide. And it's an opportunity for followers of Jesus to step up, to stand out, and to show and share the love of Jesus. When I see moments like this, I reflect back to Isaiah 6:8, where Isaiah said, "Here am I, send me." Five words, same with me. Here am I, send me. Father, I pray that hearing what we hear today, throughout this day, that we might indeed respond to the work of God in the world by reflecting the words and the prayer of Isaiah. Would you pray it out loud with me? Here am I. One more time. Say it with me. Here am I. Send me. For it's in Jesus' name and for his sake we pray. Amen.
Thanks for listening today. I really love Ed's realistic yet hopeful approach to this data. And in a couple more episodes, you're going to get to hear even more of that from David Kinnaman. But our next episode from Future Church is with the one and only Lisa Fields. You're really going to enjoy that one. So I encourage you to go ahead and listen to that next episode now, wherever you're listening to this podcast.